Thank you, Prem, and thank you, Sai Prakash. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. And welcome to this last segment of Thursday live broadcast from the studios of Radio Sai. I am Team Radio Sai's Vishu. And the time in the studios now is 8:40. And the weather outside the studios, the weather in the lanes and by lanes of Prashantinilayam Ashram is so pleasant. The summer heat has diminished and it is always such a refreshing feeling walking in the streets inside the ashram at this time when you can only hear the birds atop busily discussing and sharing what they have done during the day. And the lovely breeze, thanks to the plenty of trees all around the ashram and those globe-shaped bulbs shining and silently brightening the ashram. Really, personally, I love taking a stroll inside the ashram at this time of the day when it is as quiet as it can be. The peace pervading in the ashram just gets into you. You really feel it so palpably. In fact, the other day I was reading how these days people are preferring vacations with a difference. They do not want to go on their holiday in the ordinary way, carrying their laptops and mobile phones along. What many are opting for today is braincation. They call it braincation, or in other words, what it means is it is a digital detox holiday which weans you away from those, you know, cannot do without gadgets. So now people do not want their gadgets, their phones and the laptops to experience the cool winds of the mountains or the green environment of the countryside. They truly want to experience it themselves. And you know, that happens only when they leave these gadgets aside for some time. You know, then you go back to feeling and witnessing and experiencing nature and your surroundings in a much more serious and a soulful manner. And the reason I'm mentioning this is a lot of people who come to Prashantinilayam too, they come here because they feel there is no better place than the ashram for their digital detox holiday. I have met many of my friends who say, I feel so good here, you know, so relaxed, so refreshed. I have come here and I'm soaking myself in this ambience. I have just switched off all my gadgets. And there are only more and more people who come to Prashantinilayam every day seeking this peace, this calmness. I have heard many say, there is something in the air, you know. I can only experience it, but I cannot express it. And I always tell myself, no wonder Swami named this Prashantinilayam, the abode of supreme peace. While nothing has ever happened to decrease this PQ or the peace quotient of this place in all these decades, if anything, it has only grown and it continues to grow every single day, even now. But the story of the world outside, unfortunately, is not the same. In fact, it's quite the opposite. In the last few days, Indian media has been carrying the sad tale of how flood waters and rains fury in the state of Uttarakhand has resulted in this state facing possibly its worst natural disaster. And the people who are stranded at various places in this state are the pilgrims who were on their way to these holy shrines of Badrinath, Kedarnath, Gangotri and Yamunotri. 70,000 people are still missing, hundreds have lost their lives, and they say the toll actually will be much higher. And mysteriously, the Kedarnath shrine, which is the epicenter of this catastrophe, incidentally, the shrine somehow is intact. Apparently, two huge boulders broke away from the dome and got stuck some distance away from the shrine, and that is what they say saved the temple's main structure by directing the waters through the hutments all around the shrine. So even though everything around it is completely flat today, the shrine still stands. I might also add here that a group of 100 people from Prashantinilayam and Vrindavan ashrams had been to the holy shrine of Badrinath just last month in May, and they returned in the last week of May, and they have really come back with amazing experiences, and we are in the process of recording these sessions with them sometime very soon. All these shrines, dear listeners, are very blessed. Bhagwan himself has traveled to Badrinath and Rishikesh. They have been really epicenters of devotion and inspiration for centuries. I want at this point to make an appeal. Let us all take some time off tonight before we switch off to pray for all these brothers and sisters who are languishing in the slush and mud of these hills and waiting for some help, waiting for the army helicopters, waiting for some miracle to happen. And sometime soon we will have in the studios members of this 100 strong group who had the fortune to visit these sacred sites much before this calamity happened. So that is what we will do sometime in outside, inside, deep inside. But today we are going to, in a manner of sorts, continue from where we left off in this program last week. Last Thursday during this hour, we had a conversation with an illustrious alumnus of Bhagwan's University, of Bhagwan's educational institutions, Dr. R. Pavanandan, who is currently a visiting professor with Columbia University, and he shared how he happened to become a student in Baba's school when he was 7 or 8 years old. He joined the Sri Sathya Sai Primary School in the 3rd grade, and the moments of incredible grace that he experienced during his stay at Baba's school till he finished his 12th grade, and then he talked about his days in the engineering college in the Osmania University in Hyderabad, the difference in the philosophy and the format of education being imparted in the Sai schools and colleges there, vis-a-vis what he saw not only in Hyderabad, but also what he saw in the educational institutions in Hyderabad, in IIT Mumbai, where he went next to do his master's, with what he had experienced in Bhagwan's hostels and colleges. And then he talked about his entry into Carnegie Mellon in the US to do his MBA and his subsequent 4-year assignment with NASA's GISS Center, that is the Goddard Institute for Space Studies. And towards the end of his session of that conversation, Pavan started talking about something which he had begun experiencing in the recent past. He started sharing how, after doing research for a decade and publishing dozens of publications on climate change and various other topics, when he now reflected on Bhagwan's teachings, he realized that it had acquired a whole new and very profound meaning. And citing just one instance, you know, he quoted Brahmarpanam, the food prayer, saying how this prayer is not as simple as many of us often take it to be, and how it is not just a matter of ritual. And as he started sharing his reflections on this really set me thinking. We stopped at this point in the discussion last Thursday, but it really set off so many thoughts in my mind, and so many leads opened up, and I just thought this is such an important concept, and this has to be discussed much more elaborately, because food is something no one is exempt from in this world. Everybody every day deals with food, not once or twice but multiple times, in different formats, in several ways, and in today's times, in new avatars of food, you know, not to mention genetically modified food. Besides, you have canned food, processed food, boxed food, of course fast food, and so on. And the more we know about food, what we should eat, how we should eat, and how much to eat, and how not to eat, and how to make the most of what we have got, I think that is something which all of us can take literally to our kitchens and our dining tables. And that is what we will be discussing today. Food, mind, and our well-being in the light of Swami's teachings, of course. And joining me and Pavan in this discussion today is another brother from the Sai family, Dr. M. Anant. He's originally from India but now living in Australia, and interestingly he too is a research scientist. After graduating from IIT Chennai, he has done his doctorate from the University of Cambridge, UK, and has served for 15 years in academic research and in the corporate world. Currently he is the founding managing director of the Australian company Ascent Conference and IT Solutions. He always writes Ascent with three capital S, and those three S's are bold. It's Ascent Conference and IT Solutions. And he is a DAAD fellow, that is the German Academic Exchange Service fellow, and he's also a fellow of the Cambridge Commonwealth Trust. Of course, needless to say, I mean, it goes without saying, he has plenty of research publications to his credit. And I should not miss this, he is the chairperson of Sathya Sai Center of Wollongong in Australia. And most importantly, he is a visiting professor in our college in Prashanthinilam. He does that. Even in this visit, he is going to the college to teach Bhagwan students in the university here. So we are going to talk about the science of food and mind with these two young, bright intellectuals for the next 60 minutes or so. But before we begin, let us offer our every thought and every act at his lotus feet. Dear Lord, please bless us so that truly we understand the import of everything you have told us in all these decades, so that we become serious about implementing them in our lives to our utmost ability. With this prayer, let's move on and welcome, dear listeners, once again to this yet another episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and as I mentioned today, we discuss food, health and blood, their intrinsic relationship. And with me, as I mentioned, are brothers Pavan and Anand. Welcome, brothers, to this program.
Thank you, Bishu.
Thank you, Brother Bishu. That was a very elaborate introduction to us.
Yes, and you deserve every bit of it. I call this...
We have many more degrees than we had before we started this program. Thank you.
Okay. That's right. So, you know, I call this program Food, Head and Blood, because, you know, I just remembered how Swami used to always very sweetly talk about food do, head do, blood do. He used to say that these are the three things that are gifted to you from your parents, and food referring to what we take in, and head referring to our mind, and blood perhaps referring to the body. And in the Gita Vahini, Swami very clearly says that without food, there is no mind. We may think, you know, what has got food really got to do with the mind? And here Bhagwan is saying very clearly that if no food, then there is no mind. Now, how do you reflect on this, Pavan?
Yes, I'm pretty sure that many of us know intuitively that there's some sort of a connection, but we don't really know what to make of it because we have a hardened scientific mind nowadays. So I would like to just basically summarize what Swami has said on this. Bhagwan has explained that the grossest part of the food, solid or semi-solid food that we eat, goes on to basically form the blood and flesh. Mm-hmm. So and the bones. So this sort of the outer frame is what the grossest part of the food becomes, and also it basically gets in excreted, that part. So we will discount that. The next aspect of the food, which is a more subtle aspect, which we cannot really see with the eyes, as we know, becomes both the subtle and the subtler aspects become the mind. So the grossest aspect just basically forms our outer frame, but the subtler aspect becomes the mind. Likewise with water or any other drink, it also contributes in a subtle way. So the grossest aspect of what we drink goes out as, you know, urine. But the subtler aspect, again, forms the pranamaya kosha, which is the layer beneath the annamaya kosha or the outer frame, or it's called the life sheath basically. Yes. So you can see that both these two sheaths, the outer sheath or the annamaya kosha and the inner sheath, the sheath just below that, the pranamaya kosha, there are like three other sheaths. They are the mind sheath, the intellectual sheath, and below that, the sheath of bliss. So clearly, the outer two sheaths are going to influence the three innermost sheaths of mind, intellect, and the bliss. So in this way, the food and drink that we consume has a subtle but very, very profound impact on the mind, on the shape of the mind. And that's sort of a brief summary of what Bhagwan has explained numerous times. So
basically, you know, what we eat gets absorbed into our system at various levels.
Exactly. So on the gross, subtle, and even subtler aspects.
And since we are made up of what we eat, we exist from the time we are born, we grow with food, so it's perhaps logical that everything that we are made up of comes from the food.
Yeah.
That's right. That was a very beautiful elaboration on what Swami has told about food. In fact, to quote Bhagwan from Prashnotra Vahini,
yes, Anand.
Where Swami answers this question, what does Annamaya mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the grosser aspect of the body is Annamaya Kosha. And then comes the subtler ones. Yeah, Pranamaya, Manomaya, and Vijnanamaya, and Anandamaya Kosha comes after. So for the question on Annamaya, Swami tells us, he says, this body grew in the womb of the mother with the help of Anna, or food, taken by the mother. Besides, even after birth, it has grown and is being sustained by food alone. After death, it becomes part of the earth, which produces food. So it is Anna Maya. So Anna hyphen Maya.
Okay. Yes. So after it grows with food, and at the end again it goes back.
It becomes the food.
Becomes the food.
Through the earth.
Through the earth.
Mm.
Oh.
Yeah, so it is suffused with food concept. The aspect of food.
It grows with food and again becomes food.
Becomes food. So that is a grosser aspect of our presence. Now talking about mind, you know, as Brother Pavan was very beautifully putting it, you know, the subtler aspect goes into the mind and is perceived by the mind. Now a very beautiful anecdote for this would be, now, as we see, as we hear, the ear doesn't hear, the eyes don't see, but the mind is the one which perceives all this.
Yes.
So which is a direct proof that it is perceiving something else which is much more subtler than anything gross made of the five elements.
Yes.
Yeah, which is at a more subtler state of vibration, if we may say. And this is what Bhagavan, you know, consistently says, the vibratory aspect of food, the vibratory aspect of everything that is consumed by the senses becomes all the more pertinent when we talk of consumptions. It's not just through tongue, it's through all the senses.
Yes.
Yeah, and aptly he also talks about the body's emergence through food, just as I mentioned, and it's made of the five elements.
Yes.
And he says, my apparel is Maya, which became Akasha, Vayu, Agni, Jala, Prithvi, and Deha.
It's very interesting, and as you mentioned this, because, you know, just elaborating on what you said, Swami says that the body comes into existence through the food that the parents consume. And then Swami goes on to say, what is the origin of food? Swami says, food originated from earth.
Yes.
We all know that. And then Swami goes on, as you mentioned, where did earth come from? Earth came from water, Swami says. And where did water come from? Water came from fire. Fire came from wind. Wind came from Akasha or space. And then Swami says, where did this space come from? It came from Akasha, came from Maya.
Maya.
And what is this Maya? Swami says, this Maya, as you mentioned, it is his apparel.
That's right.
So everything, you know, has come from him, and ultimately if you see, food is such an integral part of this whole scheme of things, of creation.
Yes. Yes.
And to think that, you know, it is not affecting us it sounds so irrational now when you look at it from this perspective. In fact, I'm reminded of how Bhagavan used to give very beautiful stories, just, you know, very simple stories to explain to us. So that, you know, we always remember stories easily. Swami says there was this monk who once went to the house of a pious Brahmin couple, and these Brahmin couple, they were very righteous and, you know, observing all that is laid down in the scriptures. So, you know, you have, whenever you see a guest in front of your house, you always welcome them, Atithi Devo Bhava, and especially he's a monk. So they welcomed this monk and they provided our hospitality. And the monk was very happy, and this couple then requested him to come the next day. They wanted to make elaborate arrangements, and that's what happened. The monk was about to come, and they had festoons in front of their house. They cleaned their house, preparing for the arrival of this monk. And just at the 11th hour, there was an unfortunate thing, and his wife, who was supposed to do all the cooking, she, because of an emergency, was not available. So she was not available to do the cooking. So this husband was wondering what to do. A neighbor stepped in and said, she will do the cooking. So it was sort of a blessing out of the blue. So this person allowed the neighbor to do the cooking. The monk came, and the monk had his fill, and he was very happy. The only difference was, the monk, even as he was eating the food that day, somehow he had this urge to pick up that silver jug that was placed in front of him, the silver tumbler which was given to him. Somehow he had this unable to contain desire to take it away. He says, I don't know. No, it was just compelling desire. I have to take this, steal it, basically, to put it very simply.
That's right, yeah.
So he has his food, and, you know, because no one ever suspects him, so cleverly he takes that. He puts it in his whatever pouch, the cloth bag that the monks have, and he returns to his abode, to his hut, and the whole night he's restless. He's not able to sleep because this continuously keeps pricking. His conscience keeps bothering him. I mean, what have you done? You are a monk. Why have you stolen a silver cup? You know, what happened to all that your guru has said? And what happened to all the legacy, all the mantras you have learnt? What have you done? You know, he's unable to control his restlessness. So the next morning, the first opportunity, he goes back to the Brahmin couple, and he falls at their feet, literally, and he says, please take back this silver. I'm extremely sorry. Highly unbecoming of me to do, having done that, but I really don't know why. And they were, of course, you know, a monk is falling at their feet, but they were actually aghast. I mean, they never expected, and after having done such hospitality, providing such good care, he would do this. They never ever suspected that. They never ever realized it. And that really set the monk to think, and he started, you know, why did I do this? And he consulted many people in the village, he consulted many wise men, and only then he realized, when he went to the root of the problem, it was that since his wife was not available, you had the neighbor, the lady who came to cook, and she was apparently an irresistible thief, irrepressible thief. She was known for that. So it was because she cooked that food that in some way those vibrations got carried on through the food to him. Mm. This is the example that Swami gives. And there is another example from the life of Guru Nanak, where Guru Nanak goes to a village and he stays in the house of a carpenter who belongs to a lower caste. His name is Lalo. And there is this landlord in the village who throws a banquet, and he calls people of all castes to come and partake what he's offering. He was definitely someone who wanted to kind of establish himself and say, you know, he is the one who's providing for all, and that kind of a temperament with which he was coming from. And Guru Nanak somehow didn't go for that feast, and all the people said, you know, you can't do this. I mean, he's the landlord, and you'll be offending him. And first of all, they are not happy with you, because you being a person of the upper caste, you're now mingling with a person of the lower caste, And now he's throwing such a lavish banquet and you're not coming, Guru Nanak said, it is fine, you know, I really don't need such fine food and all that stuff. And so obviously this landlord was very agitated. He came to Guru Nanak, he said, what do you mean? You have insulted me and that kind of stuff. And Guru Nanak said, no, I'm fine. I really don't need such rich food. I'm happy here. If you really are keen to offer me the food that you have, you are most welcome to get it even now. I will have. So the landlord does that. He goes and he gets the food. And at the same time, Guru Nanak asks this carpenter in whose house he's staying, Lalo, to get food from his house. And then what Guru Nanak does is he takes the food that the landlord has given and he squeezes that. And when he squeezes that food, what comes out is blood. And when Guru Nanak squeezes the food that Lalo, the carpenter, has given him, what comes out is milk. And then Guru Nanak explains that all that you have earned is because you have oppressed all the peasants. You have exploited them and that is how you have earned this money. And you are showing off today. Look at this man. Whatever he has done it with a pure feeling. What comes out is milk. There is another way of saying, you know, amazing. How everything is, the food has so much of information.
That's right.
And I think that is what Swami has been continuously mentioning that. I mean, he would give these instances off and on, but constantly Swami has always told that, you know, what we eat is absolutely very, very important. And perhaps he's given a lot of discourses where he's gone on at length to describe the different levels of food, the different types of food. Pawan, probably you'll remember some of those discourses when you were in the school.
Yes, I've definitely. And just basically, I guess he's talked about three broad classes of food. Sattvic or balanced.
Yes.
Rajasic or exciting, passionate kind of food. And tamasic or dulling. So that's the three broad classes. Before getting into that, just right off the bat, I guess we can say without any hesitation that meat, liquor and smoking is totally off limits if you're a spiritual aspirant.
Swami has told that very clearly. If you want to make a Sai devotee, you have to abstain from all these
things. Yes, he took an oath, I remember.
Yes.
So that just, you know, right off the bat, that, you know, is totally off limits. But does that mean anything that's not either of these, you know, meat, you know, vegetarian food, is all vegetarian food sattvic? And so that's what we can just discuss, that it's not just that it's vegetarian, that to be sattvic, it has to be wholesome. It has to nourish both the body and the mind. Now, it's hard to come up with some sort of a cookbook for this, but broadly, you can feel food that's nourishing for you because it nourishes you at both the body and mind level and obviously the spirit too. It shouldn't be too spicy or too hot or too sweet or too sour, stuff like that. And also, it should not be eaten while too steaming hot. But essentially, again, no cookbook. It's just that it should, you can feel it. So the basic guideline is there should be a limit, there should be a restraint. And raw food, slightly cooked or uncooked food, which is full of the pranic energy, is probably nourishing at both the body and mind level. Now, rajasic food or sort of exciting food is exactly what it says. It's exciting, that it gets you excited and intoxicated and passionate. Now, that's, you know what it is. It's spicy food. It's that kind of food that really gets you, you know, out of a balanced state of mind. And tamasic food is really something that dulls you. Something right after you eat, you want to fall asleep, you know. Neither do you feel really nourished, but on the contrary, you just fall asleep. Now, having said all that, there does need to be some aspect of tam, if of each of these three components in what we eat.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Pavan, you are saying, this is the sattvic, rajasic and tamasic food that Swami has mentioned, but it is so difficult, isn't it? You know, how can you really stick to sattvic food and lead your life, you know, with only, say, boiled vegetables or raw salad? I mean, is it really practical? What do you think, Anand? Can you really stick to sattvic food and carry on?
Well, you see, I would start by quoting what Bhagwan has mentioned, and which has actually been quoted in the book Sadhana, The Inward Path.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you know, Swami talks about two kinds of troubles which man faces. Yeah, the physical and the spiritual. And the physical he attributes to the imbalance of the three humors, Vata, Pitta and Kapha.
Hmm.
Right?
And those are again Ayurvedic concepts.
That's right. And the spiritual, he attributes to the imbalance in the three gunas.
Yes.
Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. Yes. So now, when we're talking about the various aspects, these gunas, which are getting contributed from the food, which eventually gets painted on the mind.
Yes.
Yeah, so that would essentially mean that the food aspect also should be carefully handled. Now, when we are talking about sattva itself, beyond a limit, everything becomes tamas.
Oh, more of sattva also, sattva exactly. Also becomes tamas.
So that is why Swami describes something called the moderation in this. And he very categorically says, spiritual health is preserved and promoted by attention to the three gunas. When he says three gunas, now let's try to understand the sattva, rajas and tamas itself. When he says sattva, rajas and tamas, and from the food aspect, why are we categorizing one as sattva, rajas and tamas? From what perspective? It is from the perspective of the influence of this food on the mind's state.
Yes.
Yeah, if the mind is restful, correct, it is sattva. If the mind is hyperactive, it is rajas. If the mind withdraws and puts the body to sleep, it is tamas. Right?
That's a good way of putting it, yeah.
So, exactly. So, if Swami has told us, for spiritual well-being, we have to have the perfect moderation of these three, that would mean food, which grossly forms a part and parcel of our life and which forms the body and the mind, has to be given a major share. You know, so, the choice of the food, as we are just talking, either it's just sattva or rajas or tamas, certain kinds of food actually contributes to certain kind of the humor, Vata, Pitta, Kapha. Yeah, so a simple example, chilies.
Yes.
It's rich in vitamin C.
Yes.
Right? Now, chilies have a good effect on the phlegm.
Yes.
If you're going to cut off everything of the chilies, the spicy stuff, let's say, I'm just generalizing, it's the spicy stuff, okay?
Yes.
So, if you cut it off, then perhaps the phlegm aspect of the body would have its time, you know, residing inside the body and having its go.
Yes.
Which means the body will necessarily get into the state of tamasic, because the body wouldn't function anymore.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yes, so this moderation is something which, yes, I think is intuitive.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, it comes. Let me just add one more aspect to it. You know, if we humans talk about sattva, rajas and tamas, we know this categorization, we have this awareness of it. Just observe cats and dogs. Now, I had a lot of kittens at my home, right? Now, they have, you know, milk and various, you know, they used to hunt for rats and everything they have. But have you ever seen cats eating plants? That's a big surprise for me. You know, several times after their food, they go in search in the garden, in the farm, they go in search of a particular herb.
Is it?
Yes. They go and they just know which it is. They go and just start consuming it. It's not just cats. I have observed dogs doing it right in Prashanthinalaya, just near the shopping complex.
Mm-hmm.
They go in search of some herb and they start having it. So what tells them? They are not educated by any means of sattva, rajas and tamas. They know it all. It's an intuitive knowledge which we all possess inevitably.
Yes. Beautiful. I think as you are mentioning, I mean, you can't obviously stick to one kind of food.
That's right.
You have to have a balance. you have to have, as Bhagwan always mentioned, you have to have moderation.
That's right.
And I think that is the reason why even in the canteens here, it is not as if you get only so-called only sattvic food. In you have all kinds of food in the canteens here, but everything is within limits. And I think, and that is the tradition that Bhagwan has set in Prashanti Nilayam. And that really it takes me to discussing on these lines. You know, when you look at the food that is available today, forget the what you see in the Prashanti Nilayam ashram, but what you generally see outside, the quality of nutrients and the energy content that the food that we see outside today, most of the time, the most popular foods, is actually appalling. Because we are affected, you know, quite differently by fresh, organic food and whole life, the food that is, as compared to food which are processed, because they have a lot of artificial flavors, artificial preservatives, artificial colors and antibiotics and hormones and all that. I mean, as we were discussing before, it is so simple when you think of it. If it is a pulse, or if it is a, you know, a sprout, or it is something which is going to create life. If you put it in the ground, it is going to create life, which means it has so much of potency, so much of energy in it. Yeah, Anant, you want to add something?
I want to add something to it, because you mentioned about the potency in each of these, you know, grains. It's a very simple observation which we would have made at home.
Yes.
Is store the pulses or rice for a long time.
Yes.
It forms life.
Yes, that's what, the sprouts.
The organism.
Yes.
You know, you have moths.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not that itself producing a sprout. It creates a living animated organisms. The moths naturally form in it.
So you're calling it life food, basically.
That's right.
Yes.
So much life food.
New age word for it.
Yes.
Life food.
That's right.
They have so much power in it.
Exactly.
So obviously when you consume them, it will power you.
That's right. It adds into our life force.
Yes, life force. On the other hand, if you see a processed food, they say that actually our kidneys and livers have to work harder when we eat processed food, because they have to process all those preservatives and pesticides and all those chemicals. In fact, I was just reading, I came across a very beautiful article by a Ms. Polanski. Jan Polanski, she's a science and management graduate from Carnegie Mellon, and she's the founder of an organization called Personal Health Dynamics. And she's done research in various areas to help people lead healthy and joyful lives. And she says, sugar, caffeine, white flour, and artificial and junk food, she says, are illusions of real food.
Mm.
They are just illusions of real food, because they bring very little in terms of nutritional value to our body. And she goes on to add that the WHO, the World Health Organization, has found that the standard American diet, which generally consists of salt, sugar, generally excess salt, sugar, fat, protein, and lack of fiber, and, you know, vitamins and minerals, which are all artificial and mostly junk and processed food, these are what are contributing factors in heart disease, in cancer, in diabetes, in AIDS, in chronic fatigue.
That's correct. Yes.
And she goes on to give an example. She says when you process, for example, if you take white rice loses 70% of its nutrients, what is found in brown rice.
Yes.
In addition to lacking nutrients, what happens is the white flour, it affects your body differently than the whole grain, because it actually raises your triglyceride levels and it creates imbalances and it creates cravings. And you have these nutrients, you have, you know, even if you take synthetic vitamins and synthetic mineral supplements, you know, we take processed food and then we take supplement it with our artificial nutrients. And she says that actually doesn't really replace the actual nutrients, because a lot of these supplements are incomplete. They only tax your liver and kidney more, because they are no match to the actual nutrients. Because when you take a whole grain, you not only get these nutrients, but you get a lot of other things. The way they mingle and the way they are synergetic with various things happening in our body. So many things are lost. They are never complete. Because a lot of compounds, natural foods have a lot of compounds which work synergistically with other organs of our body, with other minerals and vitamins which support our health. And she says, compared to processed food and supplements, nature also provides some nutrients, as I was mentioning, which are there in the whole grains.
That's right.
And then she goes on to give an example of how, you know, processed foods are so much less in nutrients and how they are so much damaged. She says, processed foods are high in sodium and low in potassium. They're high in sodium and low in potassium, and which is in contrast to what your body needs.
Yes.
And what occurs in whole foods, in natural foods. She says, she gives one example, 3.5 ounces of fresh raw peas contain 316 milligram of potassium and just 2 milligram of sodium. If you take a fresh peas, what is grown,
so nice.
You get about 300 milligram of potassium and just only 2 milligram of sodium. But the same amount, 3.5 ounces of raw peas, when it becomes canned peas, then the amount of sodium from 2 mg, it becomes 236 mg. And potassium, which was 316 mg, now is reduced to 96 mg.
Wow.
I mean, that is the loss of nutrients. If you look at it, you know, the farmer and everyone, they spend so much time, energy. We spend so much time, energy in growing this stuff. And then we again spend so much time and energy removing all that we have grown.
It's interesting. The focus has changed from we being natural beings to we being so focused onto the taste.
Taste, yes.
You know, and fast food, speed.
Yes.
Yes, the speed kills.
It thrills and kills.
That's what has happened.
In fact, Bhagwan in one Kodaikanal, he was mentioning to students, you know, it is just for that 30 seconds of what you want to experience in the mouth that you do so much, you forget that after that 30 seconds that it stays in your tongue, it actually stays for 3 hours or 4 hours in your body. You're not worried about that. What it is going to happen. You're just worried about those 30 seconds and, you know, you're willing to sacrifice so much and bring so much unconsciously, you bring so much of, do so much of damage to this body, which is the temple of God.
It's true.
Interesting. So, Pawan, see, when you read about all this stuff, when you discuss about all this stuff, can we say that, okay, if we eat organic food, and, you know, stay away from processed food and junk food, is that enough?
Sadly not. Because I think that's where it becomes absolutely clear that that's just the beginning of this process of purification. Mm-hmm. So food habits, as difficult as they are to change, are just the zeroth step in the process. Now, as with any process in life, there's an input and there's an output. So at the gross level, the food and its, you know, you're looking at the nutritional content, we're looking at the balance of sodium, potassium, all that. That's definitely still at the physical level. Now, there are aspects of food and any object in this world that we cannot see with the eye. And with most, as with most things in spirituality, the purity begins first with the gross level, but there are other levels. So similarly, with the purity of food, there are three aspects Bhagwan has explained, and it's also there in the Vedic literature and perhaps elsewhere too. The purity of the provisions or groceries, as you would call them in the US and the Western world. We'll discuss this a little more. So first is the purity of the provisions. Second is the purity of the vessels in which the food is being cooked. And the third is the purity of the person who cooks the food and or serves it. So let's just break this down a little more and discuss. So the first aspect, the purity of the provisions. So basically we're talking about the purity of the produce. Now we might break this down even further. So the various aspects to it. So during the grow, for example, during the production of this process of the produce, for example, you should have done it through righteous, true, fair means. So think of fair trade, you know, what you would call fair trade today. It should not, there should not be any sort of unfair wages, you know, people being sort of asked to grow, you know, at under minimum wages, things like that. If they were involved in such a farm, then right away it's already impure. Now let's assume that here you have a lot of fair trade, everything is right. Still, if you acquire it through unfair means, again it's impure. So if you used unjust earnings at any point to acquire this, it becomes impure. So that's sort of one aspect of the purity. That's the purity of the provisions. No, the purity of the vessels. So if you're talking about the vessels themselves, they should be basically clean. They shouldn't be like dirty from the other day's food or something. They should be sort of generally in a good state of shine. They shouldn't be tarnished. And additionally, that means they shouldn't have been used at some point in cooking meat and all that, because those vibrations associated with the meat persist for a long, long time. So again, you see the bar is being set pretty high. And last but not the least, the purity of the cook and the person who serves. And the story you mentioned earlier about the kleptomaniac, or the person who had an irresistible urge to steal, cooking the food, and the monk eventually getting the same urge is a case in point. So here the cook and the purity of the cook, the thought, the state of mind is very important. And again, the person, if you go to a restaurant, the cook might be pure, but the person who's serving touches the food, his vibrations get passed on. So you can see how much more complex this aspect of purity gets.
Yes.
So that's sort of what I know about.
Yes,
based
I think
on
as you mentioned this, I'm reminded of those three terms that Bhagwan used to use, Sanskrit terms, Paka Suddhi, Padartha Suddhi, and Patra Suddhi.
Exactly.
In fact, there is Swami has talked about it in quite a few discourses, and even as we talk about this, I happen to find Bhagwan talk about this in a summer course discourse in 1990. It was 25th May 1990 during the summer course. When he was speaking to the students, he did mention about it, and I do have a clip of that. Can we listen to that now?
Oh, sure.
ఈ మనస్సనే అద్దమునందు తన యొక్క నిజ స్వరూపాన్ని చూడలేకపోతున్నాడు. He has not been able to see his true form in the mirror of mind. కనుక ఈ అద్దమునకు చేరినటువంటి మాలిన్యాన్ని శుద్ధపరచడానికి తగిన కృషి చేయాలి. Therefore we have to make efforts to cleanse this mirror from the dust. అయితే ఇది ఏ విధంగా చేయాలి? How can we do it? దీనిని చేసేటువంటి ఉపాయం ఏమిటి? What is the method of doing it? ఏ మార్గమును అనుసరించిన ఇది పరిశుద్ధం కాగలదు? What path should be followed to purify this mind? ఇది మానవుని యొక్క ఆహార విహారముల చేత ఇది పరిశుద్ధం గావించుకోవచ్చు. By proper food and habits, you can cleanse and purify the mind. Past is past. గడిచిపోయినది గడిచిపోయినది. Past is past. కానీ వర్తమానమునందైనా కూడా మన పవిత్రమైనటువంటి యొక్క మార్గమును అనుసరించి దీనిని పరిశుద్ధపరిచేటువంటి యొక్క ప్రయత్నం మనకు పూనుకోవాలి.
అట్లీస్ట్ ఇన్ ది ప్రజెంట్ వీ షుడ్ అండర్టేక్ సచ్ యాక్షన్స్ విచ్ విల్ హెల్ప్ అస్ టు క్లీన్స్ అండ్ ప్యూరిఫై ద మైండ్.
యువకులైనటువంటి విద్యార్థులు పరిశుద్ధమైన దోషరహితమైనటువంటి ఆహారమును భుజించాలి.
Students who are youth should partake pure and faultless food.
ఎటువంటి పరిస్థితులు ఎందైనా కూడాను మనము దోషముతో కూడినటువంటి ఆహారమును స్వీకరించరాదు.
Under whatever circumstances be it, we should not partake faulty and defective food.
బిచ్చం దేహార్థం, వస్త్రం శీతలార్థం. మనకు ఇచ్చినటువంటిది ఆహారము దేహరక్షణకై.
ఫుడ్ ఈస్ గివన్ ఫర్ ది ప్రొటెక్షన్ అండ్ సస్టెనెన్స్ ఆఫ్ బాడీ.
కానీ దేహమునకు కొన్ని అనారోగ్యములు కలిగించేటువంటి యొక్క ఆహారము ఇది సరి అయిన ఆహారం కాదు.
బట్ వీ షుడ్ నాట్ టేక్ సచ్ ఫుడ్ విచ్ కాజెస్ ఎయిల్మెంట్స్ ఫర్ ద బాడీ.
దీనినే భగవద్గీత యందు పాత్ర శుద్ధి, పాక శుద్ధి పదార్థ శుద్ధి అత్యవసరం అన్నారు.
ద సేమ్ థింగ్ హెస్ బీన్ డిస్క్రైబ్డ్ ఇన్ భగవద్గీత యాజ్ ది ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ ది వెసల్, ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ కుకింగ్ అండ్ ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ ది కుక్.
ఈనాడు మనము భుజించేటువంటి యొక్క పదార్థములు ఏ విధంగా మనకు లభించినవి?
హౌ హ్యావ్ యూ బీన్ ఏబుల్ టు అక్వైర్ ద థింగ్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ యూజ్డ్ ఫర్ కుకింగ్?
ఇది కేవలం అన్యాయార్జితమా లేక న్యాయార్జితమా అనేటువంటి విషయాన్ని మనం విచారించాలి.
హ్యావ్ యూ అక్వైర్డ్ దీస్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్ ఇన్ ది ప్రాపర్ వే ఆర్ ఇన్ ది ఇంప్రాపర్ వే?
ఈనాటి మానవుడు అనారోగ్యములకు కాని అశాంతికి కాని గురి కావడానికి మూల కారణము అన్యాయార్జితమైనటువంటి ఆహారమే మూల కారణం.
ద మోస్ట్ ఇంపార్టెంట్ రీజన్ ఫార్ ది ఎయిల్మెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్ టుడే ఈజ్ ది ఫుడ్ విచ్ హ్యాస్ అక్వైర్డ్ బై అన్ఫేర్ మీన్స్.
మనము సక్రమమైన ధర్మమైన న్యాయమైనటువంటి యొక్క రీతిలో మనము ఈ ఆహారాన్ని స్వీకరించడం లేదు.
వీఆర్ నాట్ అక్వైరింగ్ దీస్ ఫుడ్ ఆర్టికల్స్ బై ఫేర్ మీన్స్ ప్రాపర్ మీన్స్ ఇన్ ఎ జస్టిఫైడ్
తాత్కాలికమైనటువంటి లౌకికమైన భౌతికమైన తృప్తి నిమిత్తమై మనము విచారణ చేయక విచక్షణ జ్ఞానమును మనం విచారణ చేయించక మనం అనేక పెడమార్గములను అనుసరించడం చేతనే ఈ అన్యాయార్జితమైనటువంటి ఆహారమును మనం సేకరించుకుంటున్నాం.
వీఆర్ అక్వైరింగ్ దిస్ ఫుడ్ టెంప్టెడ్ బై ది టెంపరీ కంపెలింగ్ సర్కమ్స్టాన్సెస్ ఇన్ ఎ వర్ల్డ్లీ వే ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు గెట్ సమ్ బెనిఫిట్స్.
కనుక మొట్టమొదట ఈ మలశుద్ధ నిమిత్తమై పరిశుద్ధమైనటువంటి ఆహారాన్ని మనం సేకరించాలి.
ఫర్ ది ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ మైండ్ వీ షుడ్ పార్టేక్ ప్యూర్ ఫుడ్.
So that was Bhagwan's discourse during summer course 1990, and as we were discussing, Swami emphasized on those three levels of purity: paka suddhi, padartha suddhi, and patra suddhi. So what it means is everything has to be pure. The as Pavan was saying, and again Bhagwan reiterated that the food you take, the who cooks it, how it is brought, and the whole process of the entire 101 things or a million things that happens before the food comes to you has to be pure, and that is what is actually absolute purity in food. But Brother Anand, I mean, this is so impractical, isn't it?
And
the other thing that comes to my mind is, I mean, how much does it really, how do you really explain to someone that, you know, all these food actually absorbs the energy of everyone, you know, of all the individuals who prepare, who sell, who distribute, who harvest, who grow the food. I mean, does our food really absorb the energy of everything that it goes through? It's so difficult to understand.
That needs absolute control, isn't it? Of all the million causes which are existing before the food gets to us and then gets ingested and digested. Yeah, that's something very, very...
Imagine that everything actually gets imprinted in the food, isn't that really very difficult to...
You know, as I hear this, Brother Bishu, it's like it's an information package which is actually coming through all the way, and then we are ingesting it just at a vibrative sense. In fact, Swami talks about all the three kinds of purity. And, you know, there are this purity levels which is visible to us, which we may have control on, right?
But you can remove any, if the food is adulterated, probably you can remove something.
That's,
you know,
right.
That is something that you can do at a physical level. Beyond that, you can't do anything.
That's right. No, in fact, Swami talks about, even while eating, he says, eat only one third of your stomach full.
Yes.
Yeah, which is the solid part.
Yes.
And then he says one third is going to be water.
Yes.
And then he says one third, leave it empty.
Yes.
Because reactions are going to happen and you do not know. You need some space.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's all the more interesting here. The reason why I brought this one third of the three kinds of spaces which are necessary is the major component of that we ingest is water.
Mm.
Water plays a very potent role in nourishing. It's basically elixir of life.
Yes.
Right? And earth is majorly water.
Yes.
And our body is 3/4 water, including our brain, which is 90%
yes,
water. Now, see, this also brings me to quote one very, very interesting research by Dr. Masaru Emoto.
Yes.
Very famous, obviously.
Yes, he's famous. He's written that famous book.
That's right.
Hidden Messages in Water.
In fact, his first few books were basically self-published before he became known to the world. Yes, and in the book Hidden Messages, The Hidden Messages in Water, he actually, you know, explores into how water is impacting the personal health, the global environment, and how peace can actually start from within each of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all know his experiments.
The world will become peaceful if water is different, is it?
Let's touch on it. You know, it's very, very interesting in the sense, just for the benefit of the listeners, I'm sure, you know, here Brother Bishu and Brother Pavan have already gone through the research of Dr. Emoto.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen those pictures, but you can go on and
you know, for the benefit of the listeners.
Even then, I speak as if I, you know, because it's so surprising.
It's amazing.
It's so difficult. It's so incredible when you see the work that he has done.
Right, it's like the water crystals that he forms by merely changing the intent. No, it's not even just vibration, just the intent. Now, which is actually a thought process.
Yes.
That's all. You know, and you can see a beautiful symmetric structure forming out of water which responds to love and thank you, gratitude. Whereas every other emotion which is sent to it.
To the water molecule, to the water.
Yes, to the water molecule. The crystals that form are in such a very haphazard shape.
And they are observed under a microscope.
It's a high resolution microscope. Yes, sir, and this is extremely clear evidence of how intent, which is a mind, the power of mind over matter, if we may call. I would like to quote this particular gentleman, C. Norman Shaley, who is the founding president of American Holistic Medical Association.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he comments on Dr. Emoto's work, and I'm just reading it out. I'm quoting it. Half of Earth is water. Our body is 3/4 water. Water represents the interface between the 4th dimension in which we live and the 5th dimension sphere of our soul. Many studies have shown subtle effects of healers upon hydrogen bonding and infrared absorption of water. None of these scientific studies can compare with the beauty and the clear messages shown by Dr. Emoto's elegant work. The impact of thought and beauty has never before been demonstrated so well. We are talking about science which basically works on the perception, the sensual perceptions, external perception, and mostly visual perception. Yes, so within the visible spectrum, we want to perceive certain things, and we want to see object. Objectification is a necessity. Now, here is something which clearly shows how the mind impacts, or the intent impacts matter.
Yes.
Yes, so the reason we are talking about this is purity. Yeah, purity at all levels. Yeah, so an impure thought is obviously a unwanted intent, which has definitely impact on matter.
And it affects.
It affects.
And that...
It's packaged to transfer.
It's packaged to transfer. It's stored.
If I may just add that, isn't that, Brother Anand, due to the fact that water is able to, what as he describes it, copy and memorize information and transmit it, and so... When you give a positive message, it's basically copied by water and memorized by it. And when you give a wrong or a negative message or maybe even a slight command to it without love, it's sort of turning up these quite horrible shapes.
That's right. It's all like nature is the best hard disk that we have had. A computer hard disk which actually works, basically functions based on magnetic induction, stores patterns. It's exactly the same.
Yep.
Every material basically possesses this magnetic effect. Well, we can go into atomic level and say electron spins, basically, you know, the moments store information. That's exactly what the hard disks do.
Yes.
And that's the same case with everything that we observe.
Fantastic. In fact, even as you mentioned this, I'm reminded of the work of another scientist, Marcel Vogel. He was an IBM senior research scientist, and for 27 years he worked with IBM. And in fact, his story is very interesting. At the age of 6, he had a near-death experience, and after that he started questioning. He started asking those fundamental questions of life. What is life? What is the purpose of being here, and so on and so on. And after that, he's done tremendous work in various areas. I will not go into that. But what happened is, of course, after 27 years of being with IBM, he retired, and, you know, he created his own laboratory, which is called Psychic Research Incorporation in the US. And this lab was dedicated to the study of subtle forces and energies that radiate from living forms. So basically, he wanted to quantify those forces and build some systematic language of identification of these energies, you know, these energies which have always been labeled and dismissed as metaphysical. He wanted to quantify them. And that is what was his work towards the later part of his life. What happened in 1969 is Marcel, he just gave a course in creativity for engineers at IBM. And it was at this time that he read an article in a magazine called Argosy Magazine. And the title of that article was, "Do Plants Have Emotions?" It was about the work of polygraph expert by name Baxter, Clive Baxter. And this scientist, Baxter, he had done a lot of work with respect to responsiveness of plants to human interaction. And this was very new for Vogel. He seemed interested, and he really wanted to do something to find out and actually reject this whole concept of human-plant communication. Does it really exist? I mean, it sounded very bizarre. So he started doing some studies, and then he realized that he was able to actually duplicate what Baxter had published, that what is called the Baxter effect, where you can really prove that plants have emotions. So he saw that he was able to duplicate that because plants were responding to bioenergetic fields that the human mind releases. He saw, to put it very simply, that plants were responding to thoughts. He learned that when he released his breath slowly in front of a plant, there was no response from the plant. But when he pulsed his breath through the nostrils, and when he held a thought in his mind, the plant was responding dramatically. So, no, he found that there is so much of linkage between his breath, the thought, and how the plant was responding to it. And what he discovered amazingly is there is no time domain to it. The responsiveness of the plant to thought was the same whether it was 8 inches away, 8 feet away, or 8,000 miles away. Actually, this was when he began, you know, the transformation of Marcel happened from being a purely rational scientist to becoming a spiritual or mystical scientist. Mm. That is where his journey to this side of science began.
Yes, it's almost transcending space.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Amazing.
It seems like we're talking about God here, transcending space and time.
Yes. I was actually provoked when Brother Bishu was talking about plant responding. I was actually provoked to bring our famous Kalpataru into discussion.
Our Kalpavriksha.
Yes. Okay. It's like Bhagavan, he was communicating to it. He was basically, you know, he was intending, and it was responding.
Yes. Yes. Oh, you're talking about Swami's childhood.
Exactly.
The tamarind tree, Kalpavriksha. Swami wanted an apple came. Swami wanted a grape came. an orange appeared.
So it's like just responding. Amazing. You know, so
that was a very physical level that Swami showed.
Exactly. Physical proof. It's just there. You want a physical proof? Right here it is.
It's all connected. and it is all spiritual. There's nothing science. After some time you realize everything is only spiritual.
That's correct. That's correct. It's a mind which draws boundaries.
Boundaries. Anyway, let me go on with this work of Vogel, because it is very interesting.
Please.
And what he found later, that basically what it meant was, plants respond more to the thought of being cut or burnt or torn to the actual act.
That's right. Yes.
They respond more to the thought.
It's the power of thought.
Yeah. So he discovered that now if you tore a leaf from one plant, a second plant would respond, but only if he was paying attention to it. It reminds of the quantum physics.
That's right.
You know, wave and particle and all that. It's really amazing. So what he found out is the plants seem to be mirroring his own mental responses. So he concluded after this, the plants were basically, they are just batteries. They are just storing the energy of his thoughts and intentions. That's what he concluded. And in the end he said, this is what he said, I quote, "I learned that there is energy connected with thought. Thought can be pulsed, and the energy connected with it becomes coherent and has a laser-like power." Thought has a laser-like power.
Amazing.
And plants are basically batteries.
If laser can cut CDs, and the laser-like power thought can generate a lot of information around.
Absolutely. I mean, you can imagine what then thought can do.
Yes.
And distance is nothing. Distance is nothing.
If I might just add to this aspect of the power of thought, of I might have read this on Radio Sai actually, that in one of the Trai Brindavan sessions, there's the problem of Naxalites in much of South Central India.
Yes.
And probably even West Bengal. And one of the gentlemen was asked to speak by Bhagwan, and he sort of went off on a tangent on how, you know, horrible these Naxalites were, they're, you know, blasting all kinds of bombs and causing all kinds of violence. And Swami sort of listened for a while and stopped this gentleman apparently, and he said, all of you are worse than these Naxalites. This is just physical violence. He said, each one of you, the kinds of thoughts, the negative thoughts you're thinking, is infinitely worse than the physical violence which these Naxalites are causing. He said, that will die down in a brief time, the physical violence. But the thoughts, the negative thoughts, the violence at the thought level, persists forever. It's how all this works, how all that, we don't really fully understand. But we have to take this working hypothesis that this thought that we're sending out is some sort of energy, a most potent energy probably, and it's staying out there somewhere, and it's going to rebound and recoil it
and
at some point.
It gets seeped into,
it does,
into the world in some way.
Nothing is lost.
Nothing is lost.
Nothing is lost. I like this very beautiful analogy, which I try to bring it to my memory every time when I think about these thoughts and whether this information is fading away or is it getting lost. It's like this. You see a star, which is 1 million light years away. Yes, which means the information pattern that is being observed from Earth was generated 1 million light years ago.
Yes. Yes.
I'm seeing the past of the star.
Yes.
The information is not lost.
Correct.
Yeah. For it,
wonderful,
with respect to the star's reference, it may have been lost.
Lost.
That's ignorance.
Yes.
Yeah. But
exactly.
It does not.
Nothing ever gets lost.
You know, the recent research by NASA, you know, which talks about the dark matter and dark energy, which forms in 95% of the total universe, and the 5% being the perceived universe, clearly says we are not having empty space. We are filled with all kinds of energy all around us.
Yes.
Which stores patterns.
They are just dark for us.
That's right. Which stores everything possible.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Which the ancients and sages and, you know, in scripture it is called the Akashic records, as they say.
Let me quote this. This Akashic records of sages, this is my personal experience. Yes, somewhere in 2010, I visit one of these nadis.
You know, yes.
The palm leaf, what leaves is that?
Palm manuscripts, leaf? Palm leaf manuscripts.
Yes,
yeah,
written by the
different sages.
Very, very, very renowned and known sage, Agastya.
Yes.
Yes.
Who would see the future?
Mm. Well, it's a for me, it looks like it's a future, but it was my mother who took me there.
Okay.
And she persisted that I should actually take a reading there. Mm. Though I thought, and I did have a small argument with her, it's illogical.
Mm.
Okay. Come on, how can someone, he may be a sage, you would have realized, but yeah, so I know Swami takes care of everything, that's it. But my mom told, just take it. Why are you talking? So they asked me for my initial and my thumb impression. And I did give. About half an hour later, the gentleman comes with three bundles of leaves. The first bundle, he told me, I'm going to read this. He sings as if it's, he sings my life. And the palm leaf is maybe hardly, you know, 5 cm by 10 cm size.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and 5 lines are written on that and he sings. He says, just tell yes or no.
Okay.
And first bundle over, nothing. So I was excited. Nothing is going to be there. Second bundle. It's half through. It was partially as if he was actually reading my life out. I told him, it's just maybe partially right. He told, no, shut up. Tell yes or no.
Okay.
That's it. Partially no is no. So I kept quiet. Further, a few leaves after, he reads exactly my life. He tells my name. He tells my wife's name. He tells my parents' name. And it's all written by Sage Agastya. It's as good as he has created me.
So what is past and what is future?
That is the past. And you are talking about Akashic records. And we are talking of sages who have connected with it. And then the information has flown through them and they've expressed it. And where is the past? Where is the present? And where is the future?
Yeah,
that was bold. 2010, all these logical connections just went into my submissiveness.
Interesting. So basically, you know, what we are trying to say is everything gets stored.
Yep.
Every energy gets stored. And as Pawan was saying, if there is any negative energy, that definitely gets into the universe and definitely it comes to the food in some way.
Yes.
And Pawan, you have done a lot of work on climate change and pollution and all that. So you really know there is how much of negativity which is there in the air and in the environment.
Yeah, it just look out of the window. We know that. Yes, you know, it's just it's depressing sometimes what we have done to this planet. But yeah, it's definitely we can see. Even in the most pristine areas, for example, today, some of the worst pollution that we've caused actually is somewhere in the Arctic. Actually, it's a particular sort of absorptive kind of aerosol called black carbon.
Mm-hmm.
So the way the circulation patterns in the Earth are such that much of this gets deposited in the permafrost in the Arctic. Now, this black carbon, for example, is absorptive. So many aerosols reflect sunlight back, whereas black carbon actually absorbs. So what it does is it sort of traps heat. I'm sort of simplifying it.
Yes.
So because a lot of this is deposited on the ice in the near the Arctic, not only does it cause blackening, which means more absorption, but because much of it is settling up there, it's melting much of the permanent ice, you know. So you can see that by itself, you know, polar bears don't cause pollution there. You know, the Inuits that live in the Arctic Circle are not doing it. So clearly it's coming from the northern latitudes all the way from China,
yes.
India, US. So what I'm trying to get at here is that everything is interconnected.
Yes.
So the pollution, just because, for example, manufacturing has shifted from the United States elsewhere, it does not mean that the U.S. is necessarily any cleaner. Even within the U.S., all the pollution that's being scrubbed off the tailpipes and all that is getting into the water. So the pollution, almost 40 years back, the Cleveland River pretty much caught on fire. It was so polluted. So what they did is eventually the US EPA and all those agencies came up, the Environmental Protection Agency, and they really came up with the Clean Air Act, which pretty much over the subsequent several decades cleaned up a lot of the air. A lot of the power plants and all have scrubs and everything at the exhaust, and it's absorbing much through catalytic converters. Much of it is getting absorbed. But that has to go somewhere because it cannot just disappear. So all the scrubbing is taking into the water. So the water in the U.S., in many parts of the U.S., is some of the most contaminated now, the groundwater. So the air has become clean, more or less, but the water has become highly polluted. Now, why is all this important? Because we talked about the purity of the three kinds of purities, right? So if you're growing a food, the produce in any one of these, even if you're following the best organic farming practices, so to speak, you're not immune from all these outside effects that are beyond your control.
Yes.
So not to take anything away from organic farming as such, but it's definitely a step in the right direction that's to be applauded. At the same time, there's so much now in this complex interconnected world that's out of our control. So it's so hard to ensure these three purities, the purities of the produce, the purities of the vessel, you know. We're just at the purity of the produce, by the way.
Yes.
So you can see,
we've
polluted the very basis of our material existence, the five elements, you know, all the things that Brother Anant was discussing. All of this we've polluted. So it's really hard to really ensure the purity.
Actually, it sounds almost like an impossibility that, you know, you can have a pure intake, because at so many levels pollution has seeped in. And as you mentioned, you know, even if you are sitting in a place where you feel there is no pollution, or you have not created any pollution, you don't know how pollution is coming into you through so many channels.
Exactly.
And so now comes the question, when there is so much pollution and at so many levels and in so many dimensions, and now Swami says that there has to be purity at three levels, at all these three levels, at the purity of the food, purity of the ingredients, purity of the process of cooking. So it almost seems like, where do we go? I mean, where is the solution? And I think that is where Bhagwan brings in the concept of Paramarpanam.
That's absolutely right.
And I think that is where it becomes really important. We will discuss this. But I think at this point, let me play a short clip of Bhagwan, where Swami, after talking about all these three, Paka Shuddhi and, you know, all these three ways of how our food gets polluted, he then brings in the concept of Paramarpanam. We will listen to it and then probably will discuss it.
We are a mottamota. ఈ మలశుద్ధ నిమిత్తమై పరిశుద్ధమైనటువంటి ఆహారాన్ని మనం సేకరించాలి. ఫర్ ది ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ మైండ్ వీ షుడ్ పార్టేక్ ప్యూర్ ఫుడ్. అయితే ఇది ఏది అన్యాయం, ఏది న్యాయం అనేటువంటి విచక్షణ జ్ఞానము సామాన్యులకు ఇది చాలా తక్కువ. ఆర్డినరీ పీపుల్ మే నాట్ హ్యావ్ దట్ పవర్ ఆఫ్ డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ టు డిసైడ్ వాట్ ఈజ్ ఫేర్ అండ్ వాట్ ఈజ్ అన్ఫేర్. పాత్ర శుద్ధిగా ఉన్నదో లేదో తెలియదు. Whether the vessel is pure or impure,
అంతకంటే మనకు తెలియదు.
అండ్ ది ఫుడ్ ఆర్టికల్స్ ది ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ ఇట్ ఆర్
పాక శుద్ధి వంటవాణి యొక్క భావములు ఏ రీతిగా ఉన్నావో అది మనకు ఏమాత్రము తెలియదు.
అండ్ ది ప్రాసెస్ ఆఫ్ కుకింగ్ డిపెండ్స్ అపాన్ ద ఫీలింగ్స్ ఆఫ్ ద కుక్.
కాబట్టి ఈ అన్నింటి యొక్క పరిశుద్ధత కోసం మనం ప్రయత్నం చేస్తుంటే మన ఉదరం క్షీణించిపోతుంది.
If we want to inquire into, to find out the purity in all these three aspects,
కనుకనే ఆహారము సేకరించిన తర్వాత భగవత్ అర్పితము అనేటువంటిది చేసినప్పుడే ఇది పరిశుద్ధం అవుతుంది.
That is the reason why, if you can offer food before you partake, the food gets purified.
ఎవరికి వారు భగవంతుడు ఎక్కడున్నాడని ప్రశ్నించుకున్నప్పుడు తనలో నుంచి కూడా ఒక పెద్ద జవాబు వస్తున్నది.
When each person puts a question to himself as to where God is,
aham vaishyanaro bhutva praninam deham asritah pranapana samayukta pachannanyam chaturvidam,
అహం వైశ్వానరో భూత్వ, నేను వైశ్వాన రూపం లోపల నీ యొక్క ఉదరమునందుండి నీవు భుజించిన ఆహారాన్ని జీర్ణింపచేస్తున్నాను అని చక్కని జవాబు ఉంది.
ది రిప్లై దట్ కమ్స్ ఫ్రమ్ వితిన్ ఈస్ ఇన్ ది ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ వైశ్వానరా, ఐఎమ్ ఇన్ యువర్ స్టమక్ అండ్ ఐఎమ్ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్ ఫర్ డైజెస్టింగ్ ఆల్ ద ఫుడ్ పార్టేకన్ బై యూ.
అయితే ఎప్పుడు అతను జీర్ణింపచేస్తున్నాడు?
వెన్ డస్ హీ గెట్ దట్?
మనం భుజించిన తర్వాతనే ఇతను జీర్ణింపచేస్తున్నాడు.
ఓన్లీ ఆఫ్టర్ పార్టేక్ ఫుడ్ హీ విల్ బి గెటింగ్ ఇట్ డైజెస్టెడ్.
కనుక భగవత్ అర్పితం కాకుండా మనం భుజించటం చేత అనేక మాలిన్యము, అనేక దోషములు, అనేక పాపములు దీనిలో ప్రవేశిస్తున్నాయి.
వితౌట్ ఆఫరింగ్ ఫుడ్ టు గాడ్ వెన్ వీ పార్టేక్ ఇట్ వీ కమిట్ ఎ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ మిస్టేక్స్ సిన్స్ అండ్ ది రిజల్ట్.
కనుకనే బ్రహ్మార్పణం బ్రహ్మాగ్నో బ్రహ్మనాహృతం, బ్రహ్మార్పితం. ఈ బ్రహ్మార్పణ భావంతో మనం భుజించటం చేత అది ఆహారము కాదు, అది ప్రసాదం అవుతుంది.
Once you offer the food to Brahma, the Lord, it becomes prasada. It is no longer food. It is
kaluka andulo undinatundi doshamulanni kudanu pariharam avutai.
All the defects are removed.
Tatvara mana yokka manasuku antukunnatundi malinyamu kramakramina kontha parishuddham kagalu.
By this method, the impurities on the mirror of our mind can be slowly removed.
Tri manasaneetunte addamu parishuddhanga maarutundi.
Then only the mirror can become pure.
So that was Bhagwan's discourse again from the same summer course 1990. And it is so clear in this, Bhagwan is mentioning that all those types of pollution, patra shuddhi, padartha shuddhi and paka shuddhi, the different levels of purity that is needed in food and which is not there in present, Swami says that yes, it is so difficult to ensure that your food is pure, the ingredients are pure and the process of cooking is pure, the whole environment is pure. Yes, it is very difficult, and that is the reason why Bhagwan recommends the chanting of Brahmarpanam to protect ourselves from all these kinds of pollution. Comes to our rescue the other P, which Swami says is converting this food into prasadam. And how you do it? You do it by offering to God. Well, this is something which most of us know, especially in the Sai fraternity, that chanting Brahmarpanam is what we should do before we take food, and perhaps many times we do it mechanically, but there is so much to it. There is so much of inner significance to this mantra, and there is so much of significance behind how it works. And it's very difficult to also imagine that, you know, all this pollution that is there in the food, that is absorbed in this food, all these negative energies that is there, actually can get purified just by chanting mantra. But that is what Bhagwan says, and there are people who have experienced this. There is in some ways, science also has in some ways helped us to understand this, and perhaps this is something we all should pay a lot more attention to. And because only then what we consume will be pure, and only when we consume what is pure will we have pure thoughts, and only then our pure thoughts will lead to pure words and pure acts. So dear listeners, there is so much more to discussing about food, mind, and now that we have brought in this whole concept of Brahmarpanam and how it can help to purify what we take in, this is another whole new chapter by itself, and we really want to do justice to this by discussing about it in detail at various dimensions, how Swami has explained what this mantra does to the food and what it does to us. So that is the reason why I will probably pause the session here, this episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, and we'll continue this discussion next time, and we'll go in detail into discussing the profundity and the immense power latent in this Brahmarpanam mantra. If you have any questions on what we have been discussing till now, or if you would like to suggest or add to anything that you heard till now, you are most welcome to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org, listener@radiosai.org. The time in the studios now is 10:05, and it's strictly time to wind up this last segment of Thursday Live Broadcast from the studios. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much for listening. And yes, do write to us as always. As I mentioned, listener@radiosai.org. We take this opportunity to offer this discussion at Bhagwan's lotus feet. And we pray that in some way we become His instruments to share His message and to live His message in our lives. Even as I sign off now, dear listeners, you will listen to a drama by Gujarat Balvikas Children, which was performed in front of Bhagwan on 22nd November 2005. It is entitled The Way of Life. You will listen to this drama in a few minutes from now. Thank you so much for being with us. And if you want to download any part of Thursday Live archives, if you missed any part of this program, and if you want to listen at your convenience, you can do so from our website, radiosai.org. Just go to Thursday Live archives. Thank you so much for being with us. Keep listening. And finally, a sweet goodbye and loving sairam from Prashant Nilayam.